Welcome to the Washington Heights Church weekly podcast. We do this to help people feel at home at WHC, where we help people meet and follow Jesus. Thank you for joining us. Well, hey, thanks for joining us today on the Washington Heights weekly podcast. And today we have the opportunity to hear not just from somebody in our region, but for somebody in our state. And the Utah Attorney General, Sean Reyes, is joining us here today on the podcast. And Mr. Attorney General, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Pastor Roy. It's an honor to be with you today.
And I know that you have somebody, a really important person from your office with us today as well. Why don't you introduce us?
Oh, I do. Thank you. Dan Strong is our lead prosecutor for our Secure Strike Force, which is a legislatively mandated team that focuses on investigating and prosecuting human trafficking cases, among other things. But there's a strong emphasis. Dan then is the senior prosecutor for the entire state of Utah. He is the guy, the man. He's got great expertise and is known nationally and even internationally as an expert on the subject of combating, prosecuting human trafficking.
Wow. Well, thank you for what you both do on that front. We'll get there in just a little bit, but maybe just to understand you guys a little bit more, where you're from and your family. And I might throw this out to the people at Washington Heights. I got to meet the Attorney General a couple years ago. I was invited to be a part of a group of pastors invited by the Attorney General because he wanted to hear from us and from the people that belong to our congregations. And I got to tell you, we walked into his office, and it was a bit of a surprise because he invited us to get down on our knees and pray as we began our meeting there. And I really enjoyed those times and just appreciate the heart of the Attorney General for the state as a whole, but then to hear the efforts to end this horrible plague of human trafficking really led me to want to hear from you on this podcast as well. So again, thank you for that. But let us know a little bit more about you guys, like where you're from, your families, and what do you enjoy doing?
Sure. Well, let me let Dan introduce himself a little by way of background. Very talented, again, educated here in the state of Utah. And then I'll tell you a little bit more about me. So Dan, take it away.
Thanks. I'll try to live up to the introduction. Yeah, my name is Dan. I am from Salt Lake originally, actually from Bountiful area originally. Left the state for college and at the University of Virginia. I went to law school at Berkeley, where Sean, you also went to law school at Berkeley. We can talk about that. Ended up back here after, I don't know, exploring the country a little bit. And I prosecuted for West Valley City for my first few years before doing a little bit of federal prosecution on a grant, and then I got hired on to be the new human trafficking prosecutor at the AG's office about 5 or 6 years ago, and we've only grown our practice since then, doing, you know, kind of becoming the clearinghouse for these cases statewide. Of course, there's a lot more cases than we could ever handle ourselves, but we've established reputation as kind of experts in the area. We've done some pretty big prosecutions, and they've mostly been successful. So over time, I think people have learned that we're out there, and we get more and more case referrals all the time. We've grown the unit up to 3 prosecutors now. We have about 10 investigators. And yeah, we're it was a new field to me when I started it. I think it's new to a lot of people in the criminal justice arena, but we've been learning and teaching others, and I think we're doing good work. So I'm happy to be here.
Thank you.
And Pastor Roy, let me say on Dan's behalf, first of all, very unique experience level at the county, federal, and state level. Most prosecutors spend their careers at one, maybe two of those, but not all three. And already at a fairly young age, Dan has amassed a lot of experience. He's led some of the biggest prosecutions in the United States of human trafficking cases and been very successful. One most recently that you might have heard of because it garnered international attention, certainly a lot of local stories, was about an illegal adoption ring dealing with birth mothers that would be enticed to come from the Marshall Islands, have the children here, and then be sold on a black market adoption scheme. all the way back to our office handling cases back when I started in 2013 and 14 against a notorious criminal named Victor Rax from Central America, who was an international gang leader and who was a narco drug trafficker and also human trafficker, abusing and exploiting little boys for a decade and a half. Those types of big cases, other types of cases dealing with illegal massage parlors, illicit sexual massage parlors. That's really what's helped Utah, and we couldn't have done it without Dan. So your listeners, the people of Utah, should sleep safer because of Dan Strong. He's on watch. He's a tremendous awesome. Asset and public servant for our state. And he did go to a great law school, because it was my alma mater.
Unbiased opinion.
We had a little different undergraduate experience. Yeah. Unlike Dan, who grew up here in the great state of Utah, I grew up in Hawaii and Southern California. Born in Southern California, school years there in the inner city for part of my time, and then out in the suburbs. And every summer back, or nearly every summer back home in Hawaii, working on my grandparents' farm and ranch on the Big Island. So I spent a lot of my career at a large law firm trying cases. Then was running a venture fund. I was general counsel for a tech company, and then ran in 2012 and lost the race for attorney general, but was appointed in 2013 when my predecessor resigned. And almost immediately, one of the first things that came to my attention was this issue of human trafficking. I had known about it as a member of the FBI Citizens Academy even prior to being AG. But then all of a sudden, as Attorney General, it became one of my absolute priorities to address. And I was shocked at the amount of human trafficking activity in our little small population state and then throughout the United States and throughout the world. So, Pastor Roy, thank you for having us on. This is such an important issue for us.
Yeah, we agree with that. And I know that's just part of what the Attorney General's office oversees, but can you give us a little bit of a sense, how big of an issue is human trafficking right here in Utah? I feel like we hear about it, you know, halfway around the world, but we often don't see it, you know, right around the corner from where we live.
Dan, you want to take a first shot at that?
It's actually funny you use the phrase right around the corner, because one of our most recent investigations that resulted in a case being filed from human trafficking investigation was actually literally around the corner from my house West Salt Lake City at a motel. So it really is.
But let's be clear, Dan's not involved in any.
Thank you for the clarification.
In any improper way, yeah.
No. In fact, we had another prosecutor oversee it just so it wasn't like I'm, you know, cleaning up my own neighborhood or something like that. But it is actually around the corner from you. I think what people need to understand about human trafficking, and I really want to emphasize this, because there's been such a growth in the attention on this issue over the last years, and essentially even over the last few months, people just talking about this everywhere in the media and social media. And you know, it's exciting to see so much energy, but I think one thing that's getting missed kind of, and has always been a little bit underdeveloped in the media, is the breadth of this crime. So, you know, you talk about the international picture, and I know Sean's worked some cases that kind of fit this image, and it's certainly out there of, you know, more of a kidnapping enslavement framework where, you have children in sex slavery, being bought and sold and transported across borders and those sorts of things. And that is a form of human trafficking. But there are all kinds of cases that would be, I would call it, you know, like a broader framework than that, where somebody is being coerced or threatened into working, but may not be literally enslaved, may not have ever been literally kidnapped. They are instead manipulated by very skilled social and mental manipulators. And traffickers know that, you know, for the most part, if they kidnap someone in broad daylight, I mean, hopefully that's going to raise some eyebrows and cause some attention. And you know, we do see that happen. Of course, Elizabeth Smart case is a famous example, but that caused an uproar. And luckily, she was eventually found. I think many traffickers prefer to find people who are already in desperate situations, who may already need a place to live, or maybe addicted to drugs, or may, have these kind of survival needs. So the trafficker can step in and fill, and then hold that over the person's head in exchange for commercial sex or labor. We see it especially with immigrants, especially immigrants in questionable legal status. Oftentimes people will abuse that in order to get them to work under threat of deportation, and that's a form of trafficking. So it can take a lot of forms where, you know, these people are in a sense enslaved, and that they, you know, like any one of us could hopefully quit our jobs if we wanted to, but they can't because they'd be threatened with serious harm if they were to quit. And that's a form of trafficking and a form of enslavement. But I think the disconnect we have is people are looking for a more literal form of enslavement, more literal bonds or chains. Right. And oftentimes the things keeping these people where they are invisible.
Yeah, a lot of shades to this. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Attorney General.
Oh, no. Roy, I couldn't have said it better than Dan did. He hit an extremely important component of trafficking. It exists in every single state in the union. It exists in every country around the world. So when you're asking how prevalent it is, it's happening in our backyards around the corner. It's happening in rural areas as well as urban areas and suburban areas. Dan will agree with me. There's no community that's immune to the threat of human trafficking. And all of us or our children or our loved ones could be potential victims precisely because of what Dan said. It doesn't necessitate an abduction or chaining somebody to a radiator in their home. It can very well be somebody is forced to do something that they really don't want to do. For instance, participate in pornography that gets streamed around the world and monetized because they're worried that if they say something, that the trafficker is going to reveal information or hurt a loved one. And it doesn't even necessarily mean physically hurt. Lots of cases where young people are strongly forced, coerced into doing something because the trafficker will say, hey, look, I have information about your father or mother. They'll lose their job if you don't do X, Y, or Z. I'll share with your pastor or your bishop some compromising photos that I have of you. The young person says, right. Oh, I've never done that before. But that they take an innocent picture off of a social media page, and they use easily acquired apps to deep fake the picture. And they'll put the face of a young, innocent 12-year-old on the body of a person without clothes and say, this is going to your pastor. You're going to be shamed. You won't be invited to church. You'll lose your... But all of these, again, like Dan said, almost terroristic tactics because they're great psychological manipulators. And then all of a sudden in their own room, they're performing acts that they would never imagine just to protect their little brother or sister, their parents, or another loved one. That is the incredibly pernicious part of it. That's why we get down and pray when you come visit me, because these are the types of things that we're praying about. And I do want to acknowledge for your listeners what a great strength you've been to our group. And thank you for fellowshipping with us. We've prayed together. We've cried together. You've prayed in our office on how to fight human trafficking, and I just want to commend you for that.
Well, you know, in this world of ours, it seems like there's a lot of shades of gray, but not around this issue. You know, that's one of the things that is clearly black and white, and boy, we would just love to see it go away. And so along those lines, we have a congregation of people that cares about this issue, and we've done some things. In fact, we're hosting an End It event here at the end of September on the 26th, where people can do a 5K, and it's a fundraiser where all the funds will go to that organization to try to end human trafficking. Beyond that, if we wanted to take other steps, what could a faith community like ours do to get more involved?
Once again, I'm going to defer to Dan first, and because if I start talking, he knows. I just keep talking, so I want to make sure he has a fair chance. Dan, why don't you take a shot at that? What could their faith community do, or any community? But these are people, really family oriented and committed to trying to lift and protect others.
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing I always emphasize is educating yourselves and others as much as possible on the realities of human trafficking. Again, I think like we've really succeeded in recent years on getting the message out that this is a big problem and that it happens everywhere. I think most people are onto that now. But where we're falling short is people still don't really understand what the crime often looks like and the many different forms it takes, as we kind of alluded to already in this conversation. So I would definitely suggest any faith community that's interested in this, reach out to UTIP, the Utah Trafficking in Persons Task Force, and ask for a training. We go train all the time in all kinds of different, you know, PTAs and law enforcement as well. And we'll really do a deep dive and go into, you know, what is this crime? What's the criminal elements of it? But also, what are some examples in real life? We'll go through real cases. And I think when you go through a training like that, you come out with a much better understanding of how to recognize this. I've heard Sean talk about it. He calls it a spidey sense. And you really do kind of get a sense of what to look for. And once you have that, you'll start to notice it. You know, you might see like the same motel I alluded to earlier. I actually called it a tip one time of just, you know, there was a young girl out there and there was an older man shouting at her. She was on the grass with all of her stuff spread out. And I could tell he was, you know, berating her for some reason. And that to me screams human trafficking. Someone else might not necessarily see it that way. They might, you know, maybe see a prostitution case, but they wouldn't immediately start to look at the trafficking patterns that are evident there. But once you've been through a training, you would. And you'd also start to notice the kinds that you might see in your own congregation. Unfortunately, and I mean, not to in any congregation, hopefully, you know, not in yours, but of course we know it's everywhere. Unfortunately, one of the primary forms of trafficking these days is interfamilial trafficking. So if someone is trafficked out of their own home, often for sex. And that can be, you know, through an older sibling or even a parent or a step parent. And, you know, these are kind of akin to the sexual abuse situations that we see in every community as well. But again, knowing what to look for would hopefully cause you to reach out to someone who seems to be in a desperate or vulnerable position, ask what's going on, maybe refer them to the right resources. I think it's only when we have everybody looking for this, but also like in an informed way, that we're going to start to see these cases reported enough that we can really dig our teeth in and make a bigger impact. So
Great.
That's what I'd recommend.
Well, that's the only downside of letting Dan go first is that he does such a darn good job that I really, all I can just say is amen to that. And certainly there are, I've got some ideas about things you can do, but if that's all that people are left with from the podcast today, I think what Dan said is so important, that you educate yourself and then you be willing to see something, say something. You're willing to act on that. And truly for me, because this is a faith community that's listening to this message, I think the Spirit of God, I think others call it intuition, or he jokingly referred to it as your spidey sense, but that you will get promptings, and I think you should have the courage to act on it. Some of that training is important, because the next question is, well, how do I act on it? If I'm a woman in a restroom and I see a lady who all of a sudden rolls up her sleeve to show all sorts of bruises and it's on her arm, or she says, help me, what do I do? I don't feel qualified to do it. And that's kind of what Dan's talking about. There are, you know, trainings, there are resources, there are things, but being able to report. Now, I want to be clear. I am not asking everyone out there to start calling into the AG's office because your neighbor's dog is barking too loud. That kind of stuff, we're not going to be much help. But I tell you, if you see something that just doesn't look right or feel right in your neighborhood, call it in. And if you're local law enforcement, God bless them, but they get thousands of calls in a week. If for some reason they're not able to respond, call into the AG's line. We have a human trafficking hotline. We have a general hotline. We will go investigate. And we're not going to knock on your neighbor's door and say, hey, Jenny next door said she suspected that you might be human trafficking somebody. Can we come in and look around? I mean, we're very discreet. We're professional. We have some of the greatest investigators in the United States working for the AG's office. And we would rather investigate it and have it turn out to not be a human trafficking case. Why? Because it might be something else criminal. Or even if it's not criminal, at least we looked at it. That's a much better proposition than you not reporting it and us missing the chance to be able to take down a case like the one that Dan was talking about with the hotel. If that makes sense, that's probably the best advice that I can add to Dan.
Great. And boy, that's getting involved in, you know, the prevention and getting people rescued. Is there something that presents itself as the greatest needs for people who have been rescued? So let's say, you know, like with that hotel, people were rescued out of that situation. Where do they go from there? How what happens after people are rescued?
Well, let me try to tackle a couple of things, and then Dan can clean up on that, because there's a few aspects. The aftercare part is probably the most important part. I mean, of course, there has to be a rescue as a precursor, but really the heavy lifting comes after they're liberated, because then they spend the rest of their lives trying to deal with the horror that they endured. And survivors tend to be very resilient. They're amazing, and they can often turn the pain that they've suffered into helping others. But it takes a mental, emotional, physical attention, treatment, recovery. It also takes job training and skills so that they have something to go back to and fall back on, so they're not put in a position where they can be coerced again back into the life, right? It's once in that life, that's what they call it, the life of being a trafficking victim, of being prostituted out by a trafficker. So few make it out. And one of those reasons is because, again, they, like Dan said earlier, they're exploiting a need that they have, and the trafficker, at least in the short term, can provide that. So education, sanctuary, protection. Fortunately, we have partners that we work with, like the Asian Association, that does a tremendous job in helping to find and fit resources towards survivors of trafficking and other types of abuse and crime. But probably the thing that, at least in my mind, that they need most is support, validation. It's not their fault. The law used to punish them more than sometimes even the traffickers or the Johns. And with Dan's help and many others, we've had legislators change a lot of those laws in Utah, not necessarily nationwide yet, that recognize them as truly victims and then survivors, and then help get resources to them and treat them. You know, imagine somebody who just survived cancer, how much love and support we heap on them, and or somebody who survived an accident, a car accident, or something else. Well, these folks deserve that kind of special attention and treatment. And like I said before, sadly, many of them were treated worse by the criminal justice system. Utah's done a good job. We went from an F grade, Pastor Roy, by Shared Hope International, a nonprofit that comes in and looks comprehensively at how well we're doing in the state. We went from an F grade in 2012 to last year in 2019, we got an A.
Wow.
Because of the different programs that we have. And again, you're lucky to hear from Dan, because he's a really significant part of why we got that grade. So, Dan, what am I missing in terms of the aftercare and support for survivors and victims?
I just want to, again, emphasize kind of the shifting framework there. You know, we use the term rescue a lot, or many people do, but it's a little more fluid than that. In fact, a lot more fluid than that for many victims, because, you know, rescue kind of works as a phrase if someone was held against their will in a kidnapping or abduction situation, then we come in and imagine this moment where we free them and they run back to their family and everything's fine. With trafficking victims, especially in domestic trafficking cases, you know, it's often a lot more complicated than that. They are often people who were on the streets for years, sometimes working independently, sometimes under the thrall of a trafficker. And we may, you know, rescue them by identifying them, prosecuting their trafficker, and hopefully providing resources to them like housing and treatment for psychological issues and sometimes drug addiction. We may be able to offer all of those things, but, you know, sometimes this is a hardened person who has really been through a lot and doesn't trust the state, because as General Ray has alluded to, the state has oftentimes, you know, compounded and added to that abuse by prosecuting these people for minor offenses, you know, not knowing that they were trafficking victims. So it can be really hard to break that all down. I think it starts with building trust. And so one of the big things we do is we take what's called a victim-centered approach to these cases, which means when we investigate a case and we have any reason at all to believe that there's human trafficking involved, we are treating the potential victims as victims from word one. We're not investigating them for their own independent crimes, like there may be prostitution or shoplifting or things like that going on. We're up front looking at those as symptoms of the victimization and looking at how do we get the person behind the scenes here. And by starting that way, we are able to build more of a rapport and more of a trust that hopefully leads these victim survivors to participate in the justice process, which helps us ultimately get the trafficker. But that is all like a fairly new framework. Probably in the last 5 years or so have trafficking task forces really latched onto that. Before, you know, we got a lot of damage to undo where, you know, the old model used to be you go into one of these places, you arrest everybody there, including victims, and, you know, you treat them as a criminal if and until they tell you otherwise. Mm. And of course, that's pretty low yield strategy for criminal success and criminal prosecution. And it's also just unethical and harmful. So we're grateful to have this new approach. General Reyes has been hugely supportive of it. We got federal support for it as well. And this is kind of a new model. But I think we also need to shift the public's view and help them understand that sometimes the, you know, the victims of these crimes aren't going to look like the, you know, someone like Elizabeth Smart, who was literally pulled out of her house. It might be, and I think that helps if I go into a jury trial and somebody's expecting to see that. And what I really have is someone who, you know, probably came out of the foster care system and has done, you know, had a rough go. And they may look at that person and say, well, they put themselves in this situation. And that's really the battle I'm fighting a lot of times in court. So that's a long, complicated answer, and it's a long, complicated issue. But at the end of the day, the more we can do to provide resources to people to help them get themselves out of these desperate, vulnerable places where traffickers can abuse them, the better. Statistics show that homeless teenagers, homeless youth, are a proposition for some form of either sex or labor trafficking. Usually it's like 75% of them are propositioned within 48 hours of becoming homeless. So obviously the, and that's just off the top of my head, there's data behind that. But obviously the more we can do to stop youth from becoming homeless or helping those who have so that a trafficker is not stepping in to lure them into that trap, the better we're going to do. And I think faith communities definitely have a role to play there. You know, you all do great service and provide things for desperate people, and the more people we have doing that, and the more, you know, governments can help as well, I think the better we'll do rescuing and helping victims never fall into trafficking in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like to me maybe the greatest opportunity is to be on the preventative side, so the conditions aren't even there for it to take place.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
that's a great point.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you both, and I know our time is going really fast here, and I want to respect your time. But a question that I ask people on the podcast, and I'll put it to both of you as well. Through your interactions with this whole effort to end human trafficking, what lessons have you learned through this?
Well, let me just throw this out. That one person and one voice can make an incredible difference, an incredible impact. All of the biggest cases we've had, it's come because a single person or a couple have come forward very courageously to report and even put themselves in harm's way at time. And I'm not suggesting your listeners should run out and try to, you know, do the role of law enforcement. But these people had information. They were scared. They came forward. I've seen the impact of one person who starts a nonprofit or who supports a nonprofit. I've seen a person sitting in their home sending out an email, circulating an article about human trafficking to hundreds of people in their influence. All of those things are courageous. And a great lesson that I've learned is that every single person can make a difference in this fight. And just to expand, I know we're closing, and then I want to let Dan have the final word. Pastor Roy, please again emphasize to those listening, one, to educate themselves, because, and to be able to stand up, there's still a lot of media that is trying to portray this false narrative that human trafficking doesn't exist, that this is a fiction that law enforcement has created to gain sympathy, especially right now when law enforcement is being, you know, challenged on a lot of levels. There is a narrative by the media that trafficking is only something that politicians have made up to garner favor with the public, or that certain groups who might be supportive of trafficking, that it's their initiative and should somehow be discredited as the beliefs of a particular group. None of that is true at all. And if any of you ever have a doubt, you can talk to someone like Dan, who has seen up close and personally the absolute devastation that this heinous crime causes. There's a reason why it is the fastest growing crime globally, and why they say it's the second most lucrative. And I think maybe it's even surpassed drug dealing as the most lucrative. But the media will even challenge that and say, well, look, is it really growing? Is it really an issue? Does it really even exist in Utah? And the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. The media has a job. Often it's to, you know, sell whatever their, you know, their form of media is. And I guess it's fun to challenge, but to me it's hurtful, it's disrespectful to the victims and survivors. Two, Dan mentioned it earlier, educate yourself about the types of trafficking that occur. I'm glad that we put so much attention towards fighting sex trafficking, because it's a particularly egregious form of trafficking, but so is labor trafficking, and there are so many of those types of cases, and sometimes that's harder to see. So that might be the person that you're hiring. That might be the person who's working out on a farm somewhere in rural Utah. And you can recognize that if you know what to look for, and you can be part of the solution at helping to liberate those people. Many of them are put in life-threatening conditions against their will because their status is in question or because they don't have other opportunities. And you can make a difference. Every single person can, by recognizing what forms of trafficking exist and then coming forward and reporting it. You, because of social media, every single person listening to this has more opportunity to impact on a worldwide basis and be a fighter against trafficking than at any time in history. And sadly, right now, there are more slaves, modern day slaves, than we've had at any point in our history. So with that, my lesson again, just to reemphasize, is that we can all make a difference. This is not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. It's a humanitarian issue. And we should all be coming together to fight against this. By the way, you can support and elect public officials who prioritize this issue. I think it's important, whether it's at the presidential level or it's at the local level. And I'll leave that with as my final thoughts, along with this, that you got to involve God in this too. There got to be a lot of prayers and faith. Those young victims feel it around the world, because as we've gone to help liberate them and talk to them, they tell us that they feel those prayers. Nothing in my heart breaks my heart more when we hear from those young kids and they say, you know, we stopped praying because we thought no one was coming for us. Or we stopped praying because they've been hurt so many times that maybe God had forgotten about them. Wow. Well, your prayers and your actions and your courage can help restore that hope to many right now who are hopeless around the world, right in our own backyard here in Utah.
Hmm. Well, thank you.
I'll just jump on that too. I really learned empathy. I think I got into this business because I thought I was prosecution because I thought I wanted to, you know, get the bad guys and have those sorts of wins. And we do that, but this job has been so much more, almost like a social worker at times, hearing our victim survivor stories and what they've been through. And it's really opened my heart up. I mean, I teared up during the last prelim I did, when I was questioning the victim on the stand about how she ended up kind of in this trafficking situation. She talked about her kid and that she was going to lose her kid to to the state if she didn't have a certain amount of money by a certain amount of time, and the trafficker knew that and provided her this way to make money. And then when he took all of it, asked her, you know, told her she better keep working or she wasn't going to see her kid again, and that's why she did it. And just thinking about that, and now having my own kids, it was really hard to get through the examination. And I fancy myself a fairly detached prosecutor. I don't usually get emotionally invested, but with these cases I have, and I think all of us can benefit from having that sort of empathy, looking at someone, and even someone who may not initially look sympathetic, because desperate people do desperate things, and sometimes they aren't easy to be around. And we show an image when we do our training, and all you see in the frame is I think it's a coyote that's kind of snarling and looks really mean. And pull out the image a little bit, and the coyote's in a trap that's got its foot, you know, ensnared, and its paw, and so it's in a lot of pain, and that's why it's lashing out that way. And so I always think about that and try to look underneath what the person may be exhibiting and try to get to what's really making them have this desperate, and oftentimes it's because they're in a situation where somebody's taking advantage of them. And I think we could all benefit from kind of keeping that sort of a lens when we look at the world and look at people who may not comport with what our a vision of an ideal productive member of society is. Often, you know, that person may be experiencing things we have no idea about, and the best thing we could do is just try to be a friend and learn more about what's going on with them. And that's how we find a lot of our cases, just a good friend like that who finds something out, and lo and behold, it's a trafficking case. So.
Well, I know I speak on behalf of our congregation here when I say we wish you all the success in your roles to end this this plague here. And for whatever it's worth, you need something from Washington Heights Church, give us a call, and we'll see what we can do. But I want to thank you both, Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes and Chief Prosecutor Dan Strong. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for what you do. And, boy, I don't know. I just feel like we're linked arms here, and we want to see the same outcome.
Bless you, Pastor Roy. Good luck with your event. I'm sorry I won't be able to be there in person. But if we can get someone from our office, we'll be there to fellowship with you all and offer our support. God bless you.
Love to have it. Love to have it. Thank you both so much, and may you have great success.
All right.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Washington Heights Weekly Podcast, and we will catch you next time. Thanks for joining us for the Washington Heights Weekly Podcast. A new podcast will post every Monday. We encourage you to check it out, subscribe to it as well. It'll come into your feed automatically. And if you want to share that with somebody that you know that maybe wants to find out a little bit more about Washington Heights, go ahead and share that, and we look forward to hearing from you as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.